Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Welcome one and all to another episode of The Damage Report with me, John Iadarola, and very lucky to be joined on this auspicious Tuesday by Wasdi Lombre himself, host, presenter, all around nice guy. Waz, always good to have you here.
Man, it's always good to be here, John. It's been a minute, so I'm super excited to be with the Dragons once again.
Good to have you back. I know you're fresh off your vacation, you're rested and ready to go, ready to dive back into American politics. Oh, you chose poorly. Should have stuck to the sports, buddy. But anyway, yeah, it's going to be depressing. But at least we have each other. So thank you for being here. And for all of you in the audience, thank you as well. We've got a lot that we're going to be talking about through the course of the next 90 minutes or so. In just a minute, we're going to be diving into some CNN interviews of Trump rally supporters, our continuing quest to figure out what exactly they believe. Is there anything they won't believe? We're going to be diving into the evidence and also a couple different strategies playing out and evolving on the right for the issue of Trump and what to do about him. One of them I find to be hilarious. So wait until we get to that. And then you got JD Vance being all around terrible. Hey, the return of child labor. How fun is that? And Joe Biden making a play for, hey, things might look bad now, but give me a couple weeks. We're going to see what he thinks about that. And then in the aftermath, we got a climate apocalypse roundup and a whole bunch of other stuff. So that's going to be fun. The pastor gets robbed live on a live stream, just awful. So we're going to be diving into that too. Along the way though, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button, sharing the stream, that'd be great. So people know we're live and the algorithm does whatever it's supposed to do. And if you want to send us any comments, tweets, super chats or anything, we can respond to those as we go. But with all that said, Waz, are you ready to start the show?
Let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. Let's jump directly into this.
He didn't lose.
Says who?
He just didn't lose.
Do you believe the election was stolen?
Yes.
Do you have faith in elections now?
No.
Do you believe the 2020 election was stolen?
No, I don't believe the 2020 election was stolen. I believe that there are aspects of the 2020 election that were unfair.
Well, and as we all know, life is supposed to be fair. It's unfair to have to run for re-election after doing such an awful job and presiding over just absolute devastation in terms of the pandemic. That is unfair. I agree with them. But that is Donny O'Sullivan of CNN doing his best to talk to as many Trump supporters as he can. To his credit, he tried to talk to Proud Boys, but they were not having it. They're ready for any fight, but not a CNN reporter. Suddenly they're real quiet. They don't want to say anything. They'll shout at like a drag queen story hour, but a reporter with a camera on them, suddenly they don't have anything to say. But anyway, that is what they believe. They all believe, or at least say that they believe, that Trump won the election. Donny O'Sullivan reminded people that according to recent polling, 70% do say that. 70% believe that Biden didn't legitimately win the election. It's a year and a half out. And admittedly, you expect that in the immediate aftermath of an election where the candidate that you don't like didn't win, there can be some bad blood. Some people don't want to accept it. I have seen this from some Democrats, in the wake of George W. Bush winning, the second time around or that sort of thing. It does happen. But a year and a half out, was for 70% to believe it, to hold it up as like a badge of purity that you cannot accept all of the evidence. You can't accept the dozens of court cases. We are now a couple of months into the January 6th hearings and they all agree on this one thing. And I guess it's never gonna change. There is no new fact that's gonna be presented that's gonna get them to finally accept that the election was held fairly and that Trump didn't just lose, but lost by a lot in the popular vote.
Yeah, and what I don't understand is how they can't reconcile that the GOP and the Republicans sort of kicked butt up and down those exact same ballots all over the place, right? So we're supposed to believe that the Dems or whoever, I don't know, George Soros, I don't know who the wizard was supposed to steal it from Trump while allowing all kinds of Republicans to win down ballot during that same election. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And you know, you'll hear the chats about, well, what about Hillary and Russiagate and blah, blah, blah. They try to delegitimize Trump's election back in 2016. But again, like Democrats didn't kick butt up and down the ballot in 2016. The Republicans gained seats, they gained ground, they showed strength. But somehow Donald Trump was weaseled out of his seat. It doesn't make any sense. It's a level of delusion that, you know, that makes you feel like, look, all of these claims when people want to be snarky about Trump supporters, it is a cult. Like when people are in cults, they believe these fantastical things, like, you know, some guy's sperm has like the antidote in it. I think this is the Trumpy version of that, John.
Yeah, I've met that guy. I don't believe him. I think he's at least exaggerating. Anyway, yeah, no, you're right. And look, I think you're doing what we feel like we have to do, which is to be fair, which is okay. We're gonna try to come up with examples from our side. So you identified, you know, there were people who were after 2016, all stuff about Russia. But again, Hillary Clinton, she acknowledged that he won the day after the election, and as far as I know, other than some of literally the craziest people on Twitter, nobody thought that the Mueller investigation or anything was gonna result in Hillary Clinton becoming president. And it was pretty specific. It was, here are some really highly suspicious things that we think should be looked into. Not inventing schemes involving Hugo Chavez and ballot drop mules and all this stuff. I know someone, so I referenced George W. Bush winning re-election. I know some people didn't like that. And people were like, well, we feel like, you know, Al Gore was really robbed. You know, again, I wasn't talking about the 2000 election, but even there, that was a specific, not like in the shadows thing. The Supreme Court deciding, no, we're just not going to allow a recount.
So also, we can debate that specific thing. It was Florida.
Exactly. It wasn't, and then Al Gore was calling, like, he was calling Tallahassee, and he was like, if you could flip 10,000 votes, and there's over there, we found this thing, we got a documentary. Like, it's a specific thing that you have an issue with.
It's
whereas on the other side, they have no idea why they believe it. You saw the interview with that woman. She has no clue why she believes that Trump won. She just knows that she needs to believe that it's true.
Well, she, you know, she listens to probably, I would guess, listens to a lot of right-wing radio, which to the viewers out there, like, you think Fox News is bad? They really let that freak flag fly on right-wing talk radio. So I would assume that she's being deluded by right wing radio. I mean, I know we're on YouTube right now, so we don't want to denigrate the platform, but there's a lot of crazy stuff on YouTube out there. That's John. She might be on YouTube as well. Like, they're being constantly fed this stuff, right? Like, you think about like Russiagate. Those Rachel Maddow soccer moms who were like really plugged into Russiagate with Rachel Maddow, they were probably tuned into Rachel Maddow an hour a day, and then they would keep it pushing with PTA meetings and all that other stuff. On the right wing, like, it's been documented that they run the gamut. They do Fox News, they do hate radio in the car, they're doing the YouTube. They don't stop. They're on the freaking websites and email threads and all of that, message boards. Like, they're doing it nonstop. And so when you become that deep into the weeds, John, you can believe anything.
Exactly. Yeah. And we, if you want to believe some crazy stuff, there are paths to radicalization open to you.
Feel free.
But anyway, the stuff that we were shown before, I mean, that's certainly crazy. Like, it's not the worst stuff that Donnie O'Sullivan got, though. Let's jump into this second video.
You watched the January 6th hearings?
I have.
What do you think?
I think they're a bunch of bull.
Why?
Well, because do you have both sides, or are you getting one side of the story?
You mean like the side that attacked the Capitol?
You really believe that happened?
I was there.
Okay. I have a lot of people that were there too.
And
saw things that it wasn't what they say it was.
But there's been hundreds of Trump supporters now charged. A lot of them have pled guilty.
And do you think it's right for those people to have those people in jail and not get any justice in our American system? Are you kidding me?
Do you think it was right that they attacked the Capitol?
They didn't. That was an inside job, buddy.
Again, it's like it's an inside job of hundreds and hundreds of actors who are so committed to their role that some of them are spending time in prison now. And all of it was invented and all of it was fake. And they did a great job because for many of these people, they really don't want to be in prison. They have a history of posting about Trump and everything. There were right-wing influencers in the crowd live streaming it as it happened. I mean, it was a really effective inside job at that point. But no, there's no evidence they'll get through. She said, "Do you believe that happened?" And he fairly indisputably said, "I was there. I saw it with my own eyes." And she's like, "Oh, you think that's evidence? I have people on the inside too. You listen to a YouTuber or you listen to a crazy AM radio guy or something. You have no idea what you're talking about." She just won't accept it. Why? Because it looks bad. If it had worked, by the way, if they had successfully, I don't know, like ripped Mike Pence into 7 different parts and Trump was now like ruling on high on a throne made of Pence bones, then she would be like, January 6th is best thing ever. It was only that it failed that resulted in some of them being unwilling to accept it. And you know, the fact that Trump was saying that he loved them and all that, the fact that they listened to Trump, which is a weird thing for Antifa super soldiers to do. Why did they leave when Trump told them to leave if it was an inside job? Why? Doesn't that make him look at least a little bit better compared to the alternative? But again, we're trying to reason with people that have no interest fundamentally in reason. They're not here for reason. They're not here for logic. They're not here to understand things. They're here to feel good. And saying this stuff feels good. And admittedly, Daniel Sullivan is talking to people at a Trump rally. So let's bear in mind, this is not a random sampling.
Yeah,
exactly, Waz. These are people who they're the extreme of the extreme.
And I hesitate to do this, John, but I can't help myself but make the comparison to Barack Obama, who many people accused of having this cult of personality. You would hear them call people on the internet who constantly defended him a bunch of obots. I myself was a mindless lib who obsessed over Obama in 08 and 2010. I was still on the boat. But even Barack Obama's most fervent and ardent supporters have to admit the drone war stunk. The amount of giveaways to Wall Street and the Geithners and the Larry Summers and those people being the only people that got anything tangible out of that damn administration, you know, tens of millions of Americans losing their wealth in the housing crisis with no freaking, you know, never being made whole. All of those Main Street people that got screwed, even the biggest obots can get off of that ship and say, you know what, man? That whole thing was kind of a waste of time. This whole hope and change and this, he kind of screwed the pooch with that one. It was a missed opportunity. Even those people can admit, right? Like the Obama, the drone, like all of this stuff is like, was kind of like whack.
Yeah.
These Trump people, they just refuse to get off the boat. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. No, I have no interest in sort of trying to create like a revised history where I have like some sort of purity. If that was the thing, my brand that I was trying to present, I would have done a lot of stuff differently over the years. No, I was super excited by Obama in 2008. Mm-hmm. Before 2008, in 2004, when he gave that speech at the DNC, I was like, oh damn, a politician is not terrible. And honestly, I still like him better than people like Hillary and Biden. I still, you know, like largely accomplished as little as they did, but I like him better than, I still like him better than Buttigieg and stuff. Like you know, in terms of his persona and all that. So I don't begrudge you on that. But yeah, this is a durable thing. Like this is the rest of our lives. We're gonna be talking about Trump's inevitable demise in a few minutes. It'll go on after that. We'll get to that in a few. But first, I want to jump into where this thing might be going, because they're excited about Trump, and they're going to be even more excited if he gets back into office. But if he gets back in office, what's going to happen? Well, let's jump into this video. We'll talk about it.
It gets my deplorable blood going on a Monday morning to hear Jonathan Swan talk about a purge of the administrative state. Now, of course, he means that to be an expose and to be a hit on our movement. We take it exactly the opposite and wear it as a badge of honor. And it tells me that, yes, Jonathan Swan recognizes that there is a plan in place that this second Trump term is going to be far more consequential than the first one. And the first one was quite consequential.
Article 3, I'm going to get Mike, and we're going to have a 1 hour special on the Jonathan Swan Axios articles. I want everybody to understand deeply exactly what we're doing here. Okay, exactly what's going on, because you're going to be part of it. And particularly want people to come and step in forward and say, hey, I want to be one of those 4,000 shock troops. Or there's going to be lots of other opportunities, lots of other opportunities. Drop the phrase drain the swamp. This is beyond that. This is taking on and defeating and deconstructing the administrative state. We're going to do that. And we're going to get a 1 hour special on the Jonathan Swan Axios.
Yes, drop, drain the swamp, because we've got something better also, because he clearly had no interest in doing that. And all the same economic elites maintained a stranglehold on power as they always would. but what is he talking about there? So they have this plot for what's going to happen if Trump gets back into power. Now, there was a period where it would seem as if Steve Bannon would have nothing to do with another Trump presidency. But remember, Trump pardoned him at the end of his presidency. They seem to have reconciled. Bannon was involved with the plot around January 6th, the effort to overthrow democracy. And if they're able to get him back in, what do they want to do? Well, they referenced 4,000 shock troopers there. Well, that's obviously incendiary. It's obviously intended to make you think of the Nazis, which is fun as a direction for them to go in. But I want to talk about the article that they referenced, because Jonathan Swan of Axios has done some reporting on what they plan to do to get past some of the obstacles they faced in the first Trump term, where some weren't sufficiently loyal to him. And that stymied him at various points in the DOJ and the EPA, things like that. Not this next time. So here is what Jonathan Swan was reporting. Former President Trump's top allies are preparing to radically reshape the federal government if he is reelected, purging potentially thousands of civil servants and filling career posts with loyalists to him and his America First ideology. Now, this is going to go beyond things like changing the EPA or the IRS. Trump allies are working on plans that would potentially strip layers at the Justice Department, including the FBI, National Security Intelligence, the State Department, and the Pentagon. This is not Jonathan Swan's opinion, by the way. These are people who are involved in the planning for this. They're already getting ready for Trump to be sworn in so they can do it. They intend to stack thousands of mid-level staff jobs. Well-funded groups are already developing lists of candidates, selected often for their animus against the system, in line with Trump's long-running obsession with draining the swamp. They're not being picked because of their expertise or their policy knowledge. It's that they believe that Trump is God and you do what he says. And they are going to be filling not just that normal top 10% of the bureaucracy that every president changes. That's a historic fact that they always do that. They're going to go way deeper than that to get these bureaucratic organizations to go along with what Trump wants. But also, let's be clear, to stop them from functioning. They have no interest in virtually any of these. They don't want the IRS functioning and investigating whether people have committed tax fraud. They're not interested in that. They don't want the EPA to be able to conduct investigations. They don't want the DOJ providing oversight. The FBI. The FBI investigates their friends. And I'm talking about both like the Wall Street people as well as the right-wing extremists. They want to grind to a halt all of the functioning of government so that the only thing that can work, that will work, is whatever the hell Trump thinks up at that particular moment, Waz. And Bannon's super excited about rolling out this plan and getting the crazy listeners of his podcast to get involved in it.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. This seems like doth protest too much. The guy, it seems like they're selling a big game. If the last administration is any indication of anything, the level of coordination and organization that it would take to actually pull this off, no Trump entity has ever proved that they had the capacity to do anything resembling this. That means both of his campaigns, his one administration, nothing. The only thing they are good at doing is grift. Fundraising, getting people to rile people up, getting money. This level of bureaucratic organization, I don't buy it. One. And then two, like, Republicans already do this. They send a guy to Department of Labor to head it who's an uber capitalist. They'll send some oil guy to the EPA. They will send like the Consumer Protection Financial Bureau that Elizabeth Warren basically invented. I know somebody who actually worked there when Trump got elected. The dude came in and told everybody who was working, basically put your pens and papers down. We're not doing anything here anymore. They already do this. This is just Republicanism, you know. But then, you know, this idea of 4,000 shock troops and we're gonna do it. It's nonsense, man. They don't because they don't need to. That's what I'm saying. If they want to functionally make the EPA a non-entity, they just, you know, strip it of its funding, put people in charge who don't know what they're doing, and basically handicap these loyal civil servants, you know, from the top. They don't got to do all of this conspiratorial, we're going to take over America. It's nonsense, man.
Okay. We'll see. We're gonna check back in 2 years after Trump beats Biden or
you got to get past DeSantis first, John.
That's true. That's true. Oh, if only DeSantis will save us. Look, if this plan was going to be put into effect, look, we may disagree about how likely it is that Trump could do it, but I bet DeSantis has a better chance of doing it than Trump has.
Yes, I agree.
So, fun times are coming. How do you deal with the problem of Trump? Not if you're like a rational person or compassionate person. Now I'm talking about like if you're a Republican and you don't necessarily agree wholly with him. Now many do. He's not a problem for them to deal with, but for an increasing number, I kind of would prefer to go in another direction, like a DeSantis-y direction perhaps. And actually coming out and like opposing him still pretty dangerous. He will freak out all over you, as Fox News recently found out. So he was attacking them because on Fox and Friends, they were talking about his poll numbers and he felt like they were begrudging him, that they weren't giving him due respect. He said, they've gone to the dark side. He said, they just really botched my poll numbers, no doubt on purpose. That show's been terrible, gone to the dark side. They quickly quote the big turning point poll victory of almost 60 points over the number two Republican and then hammer me with outliers. Actually, almost all polls have me leading all Republicans and Biden by a lot. That's not true. Look, we're gonna stop for a second because it's weird. And I'm not a person who looks for opportunities to give Biden credit, but in the polls, he still is very narrowly beating Trump. So that's a lie. Also, you gotta love them citing a poll where he's winning by 60 points isn't enough to satisfy him. He still gets freaked out all of them. But that's not the best part about that quote. My favorite part is this, almost 60 points over the number two Republican. Say his name, buddy. You can't say Ron, is that it was too hard to pronounce? Like, I love that he won't even identify. This is an alpha male Republican who is confident that he's gonna destroy the person that he can't name, like it's Voldemort. He's afraid to invoke the name DeSantis. What sort of weird ceasefire do they have where they can't even say each other's names? And bear in mind, Trump has been attacking DeSantis in really petty, backhanded ways for literally months, implying that he had lied about not getting vaccinated and stuff like that. But he still can't actually say who he's talking about. And yet he maintains this aura of being like a real man's man. You know, real men's men who like get in a guy's face and then turn around because confrontation, ooh, too scary. But anyway, they I guess criticized him a little bit somehow and he freaked out all over them. So for a lot of Republicans, it's not necessarily a good strategy, especially if like you're, you know, theoretically running for re-election. And so I saw this article on the Bulwark. Tim Miller had been meeting, been talking to some Republicans, and the evolving strategy for some seems to be humor him until he dies. They are planning to just drag out telling him he's great and that he's absolutely the best until, you know, everything about him and his lifestyle catches up to him and he passes away. He's an older guy, it might not be that much longer, but that is what they're saying behind closed doors was that we can't take him out. It's too dangerous. We'll just wait until the guy croaks. What do you think?
I mean, to be honest, that is actually their best strategy. As morbid as that sounds, his hold on the base is still pretty strong. And I think that's obvious. And, you know, the idea that they're going to put DeSantis up there, you know, I remember when it was Chris Christie and Marco Rubio and all these serious Republicans. No, Ted Cruz is going to, he's just going to out Harvard him to death or Yale, wherever the hell Ted Cruz went. And it just didn't work on that Republican stage. So, you know, the idea that DeSantis is going to come in on his white horse and save elite Republicans from having to deal with Trump, I just it's hard for me to see it. So, yeah, man, the guy dying is basically their last hope. It's Mother Nature.
Yeah. Now, Mac Bain is saying in the chat, like, this is how, you know, in countries as dictators, you just. You keep your head down and you wait for him to die and hope that his son is better, I guess. Yeah, I guess that's what it is. I need to see with DeSantis. We've only got a few more months until they're both actively running for president. If DeSantis can't punch him in the face, bye-bye DeSantis. It's not going to work. Because Trump will go despoiled earth. He will go scorched earth all over DeSantis. So if DeSantis can stand up to it, then maybe he has a chance. I think there's a lot of Republicans who would rather have DeSantis, but I don't know that he has it in him. Ron DeSantis is the guy who ran the campaign commercial where he was reading like a kid's book about Trump to his baby, and his wife came on to talk about how great Trump was. He's got big cuck energy when it comes to Trump. So I don't know that he can stand up to him, but if he can, then maybe he's got a chance. But it's so weird. Like this ties back to what we were talking about with Obama. There's never been, I don't think, a situation in our life like this with the Democrats. The idea that like, okay, I'm gonna run for president, but I can't say anything about Al Gore or even Obama. I mean, maybe you have to be a little bit careful with Obama, but I don't feel like people are like absolutely obsessed with him years after his successful two terms. Than people are with Trump after just the one. It's weird.
Well, Democrats rarely display the level of mean-spiritedness or cutthroatness that Trump displays, except for when they're going after the left, but whatever, that's neither here nor there. They rarely display this level of ruthlessness that Trump has shown anybody who went against him. So I can understand why it just never happened. But yeah, Trump has been so expert at just. Look, man, he called Ted Cruz's wife ugly to his face, said his father did Kennedy, and Ted Cruz phone banked for him publicly.
So pathetic.
Yeah, that's what he does.
Yeah. Use that as your strategy, DeSantis. Be the next Ted Cruz. That'll work well for you. Anyway, with that said, we gotta get to our first break. We come back. JD Vance has got some marriage advice that I think we've got a few problems with. We'll break it down after this. Okay, everybody, let's see what JD Vance has to say in this clip.
I mean, culturally, something has clearly shifted. I mean, I think it's easy, but also probably true to blame the sexual revolution of the 1960s. You know, my grandparents had an incredibly chaotic marriage in a lot of ways, but they never got divorced, right? They were together to the end, till death do us part. That was a really important thing to my grandmother and my grandfather. And this is one of the great tricks that I think the sexual revolution pulled on the American populace, which is this idea that like, well, okay, these marriages were fundamentally, you know, they were maybe even violent, but certainly they were unhappy. And so getting rid of them and making it easier for people to shift spouses like they changed their underwear, that's going to make people happier in the long term. And maybe it worked out for the moms and dads, though I'm skeptical, but it really didn't work out for the kids of those marriages. And I think that's what all of us should be honest about, is we've run this experiment in real time, and what we have is a lot of very, very real family dysfunction that's making our kids unhappy.
Okay, so JD Vance is a sick MF-er in a lot of ways. He's wrong about basically everything. So why wouldn't he be wrong about relationships too? To make it clear, and we're gonna dive more into the specifics, he is saying that sure, the marriages were violent and unhappy, but at least they stuck it out. And thanks to the sexual revolution, which he blames for all the problems which he identifies now, we're gonna get to the numbers, It's not even true. The problems he identifies don't actually exist. He says, sure, that meant that some of these women could get out of these violent marriages. Maybe that was good for them. I'm not even sure about that. But wouldn't it have been better for the kids, for the mom to have stuck around and let the dad beat her for a few more decades? That's his opinion. Look, I don't know his parents. I don't know his grandparents. They can make whatever decisions for their relationship they want. That is the responsibility of every person. But for him to blanket imply that cultural and legal traditions changing to allow women to get out of abusive relationships was only arguably maybe good for them, but wasn't worth it after all because of the negative effect it had on the kids is sicker than I can imagine. And again, he's identifying the problem as the sexual revolution. He doesn't seem to have a problem with the abuse. He doesn't seem to have a problem with, let's say, millennia of men routinely beating their intimate partners. That doesn't bother him. That's not worth fixing. It's not even worth discussing. No, the hippies and free love. That's the true problem, really. And I want to give you some more details on the relationship he's talking about there. So in Hillbilly Elegy, he talks about his grandparents as, in his words, violent marriage. He said his grandfather was a violent drunk before he got sober, and his grandmother was a violent non-drunk. In one instance, before he was born, his grandmother warned his grandfather that she'd kill him if he ever came home drunk again. He continued to drink, and so she tried to kill him. Mama, never one to tell a lie, calmly retrieved a gasoline canister, poured it all over her husband, lit a match, and dropped it on his chest. When Papa burst into flames, their 11-year-old daughter jumped into action to put out the fire and save his life. But they stuck it out, and that's really what's important at the end of the day. Even if your partner is beating you, setting you on fire, it's important to make it work. That is what J.D. Vance believes. And he doesn't just believe that as an author or a guy who's trying to promote his like artistic work. He wants to be in charge of laws as a senator was. That seems like a dangerous position to put the country in, from my point of view.
Just as a quick aside, John, I gotta correct you because you are a coastal elitist. It's Mama and Papa. That's those folks in Appalachia will not soon forgive you for that mistake. Okay. But no, in all seriousness,
it's not Mama,
not and Papa.
Okay.
In all seriousness, this is quite frankly just one of the dumbest, most ridiculous, most disgusting things you've ever seen. Like, even the most frothing at the mouth, right wing, crazy wing nut person will agree that if you're getting your head split open and gasoline poured on you in your marriage, you might want to start a new one. Like, yep. this is not a message that appeals to anyone. Nobody thinks that they should endure physical, verbal, emotional abuse just so they could keep a marriage going, even for kids. Like this, nobody would think this was a sane argument except for the most like ridiculously religious God, marriage, forever covenant people. Like, this is a small minority of people who would hold this opinion. So if this guy's trying to curry popular favor with stupidity like this, this is absurd. I don't even know what to do with this.
You're 100% right. And bear in mind, this is a guy who would want Papa. We're gonna say Papa. He would have wanted Papa to still be able to go out and buy an AR-15. Like, fresh off of beating Meemaw, he should not be blocked from getting an AR-15. Just to be clear, that is what J.D. Vance believes. So that's fun. Now here is culturally the core of this issue. The right needs you to believe, they desperately need you to believe, that we are a decadent society that is falling under the weight of our own cultural evolution and hubris. They cannot allow you to understand that some things are getting better for a couple different reasons. One, because you have to be terrified about the state of American culture in all aspects. Two, because to identify the things that have gotten better, you might start to wonder why, and then you might start to realize some of the things that were causing problems for us to begin with. And I wanna jump into two examples that he will not be able to acknowledge. One is that domestic violence is thankfully much more rare than it used to be. The rate of reported domestic violence significantly declined in recent decades, decreasing from 15.5 per 1,000 women and 2.8 per 1,000 men to just a third as many women. And it looks like 1/5 as many men. That's just from 1995 through 2015. I mean, God only knows if we were going to go back to the time of Meemaw and Paw Paw Paw. I mean, God only knows at that point. But thankfully, it's dropped a lot. Less partners are hitting each other, abusing each other in a variety of different ways. Now, there is evidence that that has ticked back up during the pandemic. That is tragic and it needs to be stopped. But this is good news. It's also good news when we identify the reason that thankfully far fewer men are beating their partners. Now, he's never going to acknowledge that that was a problem. He can't acknowledge the progress. But let's also bear in mind that he wants you to believe that divorce is a massive, massive problem. Now, how big of a problem is divorce? Well, I'm sure, as you know, half of all marriages end in divorce. And you know that because people have been saying that for literally decades. And it doesn't matter what the actual numbers are. That's not remotely true. And yet most people seem to think half of all marriages end in divorce. No, divorce rates are actually at a 50-year low right now. Just 14.9 out of 1,000 marriages ended in divorce in 2020. The latest in a steady decline since divorce rates hits their peak back in 1980. Wow. In his state, nationally, it's going down. These are good things. They're not good things because divorce is the worst thing. If you're in a marriage that needs to end, you should be able to get divorced. And thankfully, troglodytes like J.D. Vance are no longer in charge, so you legally can get a divorce. You used to be legally bound to your abusive spouse. That's the world he wants. Now, thankfully, these situations have improved. And let's keep it that way by keeping people like J.D. Vance out of power. That would be my suggestion.
Well, John, the kids won't have a front row seat to a 2x4 to their mother's head. Like, obviously, this is, you know, hindering their development, John. It's ridiculous. This idea that kids aren't affected by the abuse of their parents is crazy, or that these abusive people don't abuse the kids too. So it's like you get the PTSD from watching your parent be constantly abused, and then you yourself are on the receiving end of that type of violence. This is the type of thing that back in the days would just straight up disqualify a guy from even thinking about trying to run for public office. But in our we've devolved so much in our politics and what our expectations are for the people who are ostensibly running our lives that this won't even get them out of the race.
Yeah, 100%. It's not the worst thing that he said recently, honestly. It's top 20, maybe, but not the worst. You know, during that social break, I just reminded myself that there's a non-zero chance that Michelle Obama could try to challenge if Joe Biden doesn't go for re-election was. Oh man, it's gonna be exciting. You think he's gonna run? You think he can't run, right? He's at like 26%. He can't run again, right?
I don't know. Like, they couldn't get Ruth Bader Ginsburg to step aside, right? Like, it's just not something that they do. You know what I mean? But why would he want to? All right, you got
moving is tough. He's old. He doesn't want to move.
Like. he got to say, like, all right, I've become president or whatever. Like, the dude is clearly declining. He's declined. You know how the recliner, like the beach chair, can go like this or it can go flat? Like, he's flat. He can't go down anymore. I don't know. It'd be nice if somebody else ran.
I have a few ideas, or we'll figure it out.
You know, billionaire Michelle Obama. I don't know that I'd be too excited about it, but whatever.
I'd take her over some of them. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, everybody. Let's see what's going on with. Oh no! Sometimes I forget about the things we're gonna talk about. Okay, let's talk about it. You remember child labor in America? That evil that we stamped out. Or so we thought. No, apparently it's alive and well, at least at a Hyundai subsidiary in an Alabama factory, using kids as young as 11 or 12. Now, there's a great reporting on this by Reuters. We're gonna give you some of the top line details. They worked at a smart metal stamping plant in Laverne, Alabama, which supplies parts for the Hyundai assembly line in nearby Montgomery. So it's not technically Hyundai factory, but it provides parts to it. It's contracted by them to do that. You can see a little picture here outside of the child labor mill, I suppose. Anyway, a statement was sent after Reuters put out their original reporting from Hyundai addressing these allegations, saying, quote, it does not tolerate illegal employment practices at any Hyundai entity. We have policies and procedures in place that require compliance with all local, state, and federal laws. But it didn't answer any other detailed questions from Reuters about it. So this blanket statement, we'd never, never, never do anything bad and we love doing stuff that's legal. Okay, that's good, that's good. But let's look at the evidence. News outlet Reuters said that it learned of this child labor following the brief disappearance of a Guatemalan migrant from a family's home back in February. So there's a 14-year-old, or about to be 14. We have her two brothers, aged 12 and 15, were apparently not attending school and were working at the plant. They weren't the only ones. It was part of a larger group that apparently had abandoned schooling to work long shifts at the plant. And they had apparently been recruited by some sort of recruitment agency. As far as I have seen, it has not been identified. I feel like that's a big part of this story that they should track down. Because one would hope that if you're doing effectively headhunting for this, you'd be looking at stuff like age, especially for your 12 and 13 year olds. They can't look 25. So definitely want to see them look into this. But according to a former employee, there are around 50 underage workers at this facility. Waz, what do you think?
I mean, look, John, these kids need to get up off their iPads, get off the couch, and get to work. These kids are getting soft. John, I'm sick of it, man. These people and their screen time, we gotta get them off of their butts. They gotta be more active. No, I'm just kidding. This is terrible, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I think it speaks to the problems of our current economy. Just the idea that a parent would be like, you know, not only am I gonna send my kid to work, maybe you get a job in the summer at a lemonade stand or something. No, mm-hmm. I'm gonna send them to a factory. You know, like that is such a grown up job, man. It's not even one of those things where, you know, you want to teach the kid responsibility, get up every day, be on time, be somebody who folks can count on, etc. Like this just seems like an extreme version of that. And that you would have just allowed this as a company is just ridiculous. And you know why they're doing it, because they could pay them a lot less than they would an adult yep. who probably needs a job way more.
100%. Yeah, and I don't know why the kids signed up. Maybe they're just trying to help out their parents. It's really difficult times. I would say let's work towards a society where 12 to 14 year olds don't feel like they have to drop out of school to help their family make ends meet. I don't know that that's why they're doing it, but I feel like it seems like they're trying to be responsible. And a lot of it is going to come down to conditions and everything. Like, by the way, I started working at like probably 14. I wasn't working in a factory producing car parts, to be fair. I was bussing tables at an Italian restaurant and doing catering at a university and stuff like that. So I get that you want to have a little bit of money and there should be opportunities. 11, 12 seems kind of young. And I think the context of it being a factory is important. So we do need more details. And we can't say that this is necessarily part of some big trend or anything, but we know economically, we went into the pandemic in a bad state. We came out of it in a far worse state. I think we need to be very careful about what we allow to become the new normal. And I don't think it should be child labor. Let's just be clear about that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I couldn't agree more. Although, yeah, I am sick of these kids and their TikTok and their iPads. I'm not gonna
exactly.
lie.
Less Fortnite, more late nights. Burning the midnight oil. Okay, that's what I say. Less World of Warcraft and more a world of kids getting under cars and pulling out transmissions.
You're gonna need a new tranny. You need a new carburetor, John.
I know, they do fit under the car much better. You don't need lifts when it's a 9-year-old. Anyway, God, okay. Yeah, I don't think kids play World of Warcraft anymore, I have to imagine. Yeah, probably not Fortnite either. I'm old. Anyway, what do they play? Fall Guys? No, that's like a year or two. Do they play? What games do they play? Am I allowed to play the games that they play? Probably not. Anyway, with that said, I'm gonna read just a couple comments and we're jumping to our last story. Let's see. Agent Kaleson says, do you think Bilbo Dragons be a good dragon name? I don't mind it. I don't mind it. Feel good. Minecraft and Roblox. Well, Minecraft is like 30 years old. They're still playing that. Anyway. Let's see. Kruger Like Freddy's been here for 11 months on Twitch. Says, thank you for keeping me sane since 2015. TYT has given me a new outlook on politics. I am progressive because of Yins. Love my TYT family. Thank you so much. Late Bloomer's been here for 25 months. Says, love Waz and John together. Also love that I get to watch live for my 25 month subversary. We're very glad to have you here. Anyway, okay, let's jump into another little ironic fun story with this. Representative Glenn Thompson had a fun weekend. He actually attended his son's wedding. Now his son is gay. They had a wedding and he attended, which was great. It was also ironic though, because Glenn Thomas was one of 157 Republicans who voted against the Respect for Marriage Act last week. So during the week, he votes against same-sex marriage codification. Then the weekend he goes and attends one. I guess get you a bigot who can do both with Representative Glenn Thompson. Anyway, one of his spokespeople put out a statement because, you know, a lot of people have had an issue with this. Said Congressman and Mrs. Thompson were thrilled to attend and celebrate their son's marriage on Friday night as he began this new chapter in his life. The Thompsons are very happy to welcome their new son-in-law into their family. Yes, they are thrilled that their son was able to do something that they would love to ban millions of other people from doing if they can just get enough power to do it, Waz. Seems weird.
There's so many confusing things about Republican policies, but like just the idea that you gotta pay lip service to being against gay people getting married, like we haven't had this for over a decade or however long it's been. And guess what? The world hasn't fallen apart. Everybody's fine. We haven't turned this into Sodom and Gomorrah, although that would probably be pretty fun. I don't understand why they still have to do this. Mm-hmm. This is embarrassing. This is stupid. I get it. Right wing politics are pretty stupid just at the base level, but this just seems so ridiculous that you couldn't come out and say, yo, my freaking son is gay. I'm not voting against this.
Yep. Exactly. This thing
I don't understand that.
That I on an individual level say is fine. And that like there's no argument to be made that it has societally caused problems. As I said earlier in the week, even if it did cause those problems, it's a right. They should be allowed to do it. But it also isn't true. It doesn't cause problems. So what is your reason to be against it? He's a Republican. I don't know. It's bigotry. His fans expect him to be a bigot. Although, let's point out, as we have, 47 Republicans did vote to codify it. So like what was when you say, I don't know why you have to do this. That's even more reason why, like, yeah, you probably didn't have to do this. You could have joined the nearly 50 Republicans that have supported it. And by the way, he's a Pennsylvania Republican. Recent Pew polling on acceptance of same-sex marriage in Pennsylvania, 54% support, 37% oppose, and 9% still don't know years into legal same-sex marriage. Like, seriously, could you come to a decision at some point on a pretty clear core thing? Anyway. So many in his party are moving towards it. His own son is gay and majority support in his state for it. So get with the times. Like, I feel like you can catch up at this point.
Yeah, I just don't understand. And again, like the Democrats, they just don't do this. Like when a Republican puts forward a bill that says, that say, you know, gives billions of dollars to Raytheon, they get right in there. They're just like, yes, mm-hmm, let's do it. I don't care if it's the Republicans proposing it. I love this. I don't mm-hmm know why the GOP feels the need to do this. I'm just anti everything. It's silly.
Yeah, it is quite silly and frustrating. Anyway, yeah. By the way, we're waiting to see what's going to happen with Schumer putting forward that bill in the Senate. Like, supposedly 5 Republicans have said that they will support it, but you need 5 more because literally everything is automatically filibustered, which is a state that we've just accepted and everybody's moving on. We don't make a big deal every day out of the fact that every single thing gets the Mr. Smith goes to Washington treatment automatically. okay, seems weird. But anyway, they think maybe they can get it done. I think Tammy Baldwin is trying to whip some Republican support for it. So we'll see if they can get that done. That said, that is all the time we have for the first hour of the show. So for those of you on the linear platforms or on the podcast, thank you so much for watching. We do appreciate it. If you're on the podcast, actually, you can go to Apple Podcasts and rate and review the podcast. That would be great. For those of you watching on other platforms, though, we've got a lot more to talk about, including some fun stuff. So don't go anywhere. Waz and I will be back after this. Non-human humanist says, one of my female ancestors in the 1900s also took the till death do us part seriously. She allegedly poisoned her husband. Divorce sounds better. Yeah, that's preferable, I think.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.